When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For some of us, we know what happened to that kick. In a snowstorm against the Giants 42 years ago yesterday, December 19th, 1982, Mark Moseley set the NFL record with his 21st consecutive field goal. Hit it from 42 yards out to beat the Giants 15-14. It also clinched a playoff berth, which would lead to a playoff run and the team's first Super Bowl title, Super Bowl 17, in January of 1983. It's my pleasure to welcome on to the show Mark Moseley, the 1982 NFL MVP. He joins us courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Mark, thanks so much for making time for me. I mentioned to you earlier that I've been thinking about you a lot in recent years to call you up and have you on, but last night in that Chargers-Broncos game, the fair catch free kick at the end of the first half made me think of you again because you tried a couple of those, including one in the against the Giants back in 79, and you would be the one who knew the rule and remembered attempting a few of them. How have you been?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, thank you. Just trying to finish up my morning workout.
You're still in shape, aren't you? You were always the best in-shape kicker in the NFL.
Well, I've tried to stay in shape. At least the doctors say whatever I'm doing, just keep doing it. So I'm trying.
Well, good for you.
My age, though, it's getting harder.
So before we get to other things, including your thoughts on this year's team, what do you remember about the second longest field goal attempt in NFL history, 74 yards on a fair catch free kick against the Giants in 1979?
Well, it's been a long time ago. My brain's not my mind's not as sharp as it used to be by any means. But I do remember this because Coach Pardee had called, had told Mike Nelms to call for a fair catch and called. You got to yell out free kick, free kick, and he did. But there was a penalty on the play, and it would have been, I think, a 67-yard field goal? No, 60.
64-yarder? Was it a 10-yard penalty?
Yeah, it would have been a – yeah, there was a penalty on the play, and it would have been – the penalty, though, when it sent us back another 5 yards.
Okay. So it would have been 69, and it went to 74.
Yeah, it went to 74. And so we and he didn't call it off. And I'm not for sure why, if he just didn't think about it or whatever, but he didn't call it off. So we had to go out and attempt the 74-yard field goal. Now, I had made, in practice that week, a 72-yarder. And that's why he was thinking, well, you know, we need – I think we were, at the time, we're 8 points behind. And so we were going to need 3 points somewhere. And this the way the free kick works is you call a fair catch or free kick. And from that spot is where you kick from. You don't have to move back 7 yards. But you kick it from there, and everybody lines up like it's a kickoff. And you cover it like a kickoff, and so it was a little bit different. And when I hit the thing, Joe came out and held the ball still because you have to kick it off the ground.
Right.
And he held it. I kicked the ball, and I mean, I just unloaded. As a matter of fact, the fans almost sucked the air out of the stadium when I hit it because I hit it so hard. And it was one of those, everybody sucking in thinking it was going to go. And it was going down the middle almost the entire way until at the very end, at that end zone down there where the wind was circling around.
It was in the Meadowlands, right?
Yep, it was in the Meadowlands, and it started moving it to the right. And Theismann had already jumped up in my arms. He thought I made it. And then all of a sudden the wind took it, and it moved it to the right, and it just grazed the right upright.
Really?
And, yep, it was long enough, but just wide right. It just, and I mean, it was so close. It was like a hair. It just grazed the right upright.
And yeah, I didn't know that part of it. I mean, again, so Sebastian Janikowski has the longest field goal attempt in NFL history, 76 yards in 2008. And the kick that Mark's talking about right now is the second longest attempt. And by the way, if it had gone in, you would have shattered Dempsey's record by 11 yards.
Yeah, that's what made it so crazy. But, you know, the thing about it is back in those days, teams didn't kick 50 yarder. They didn't kick long field goals. If you kicked a 50 yarder, that was unusual.
Right.
And I had already attempted, I was the first kicker to attempt 250 yarders in one game that I made against the Giants up there up at Meadowlands. I actually tied the game, and then in overtime kicked another 52 to win it. And then, but I did that several times in my career, but back then you just didn't kick the long field goals. I think it was in 76 or 77. I have a letter from Coach Allen congratulating me on making more 50-yard field goals than the rest of the league put together. So we were one of the few teams, and I like to kick long field goals. There wasn't really any pressure on you because you weren't expected to make them. But I had the strong enough leg to do it, so we tried them. I had long field goals every year in my career, even up to the very end. And so it was, but kicking those free kicks, what they call, I think they call it a free kick, and you have to actually call it out. When you hold your hand up as a receiver of the ball, that receiver has got to call free kick, and the officials have to hear it, and that's when they do it. It's not used very much. It's just usually at the end of games or end of a half or in our situation, we needed 3 points somehow, and the clock was running out, so we went ahead and took a chance on it.
That's interesting. I don't know that was part of the play last night, if the returner had to yell out free kick, because the truth is he didn't catch it in a spot where they could kick a field goal. He got interfered with, and that added 15 yards, which put him in range from 57.
Wow.
So yeah. I don't know. Maybe that was part of it back then. I don't know that it is now, but still, it's such an odd play, but we see it occasionally. We just haven't seen one made until last night since 76. Ray Wershing made one. That was the last one made. But you attempted the longest one, and you still have the longest fair catch free kick attempt because Janikowski's was not a fair catch free kick. You, like you said, you had a big leg. Everybody in the league knew it. All the fans knew that Mark Moseley had the strongest leg in the league. And you never did, other than those two 70-yarders, the 70-yarder against Houston in 79 and the 74-yarder that you were just talking about, I don't think you attempted another one that would have broken the record. Am I right about that or not?
No, I don't think I ever did. Most of the ones that I made that were long field goals were over 50. They were between 50 and I think the longest. I made several 54-yarders throughout my career, but that was about as long. We just didn't try many. What I said earlier, we just didn't try 50-yard field goals. Now they, 50-yard, if they get for a 50-yard, they're going to try it, regardless of what the situation is on the field.
Yeah, your longest field goal of your career was 54 yards. But you know, the one that you didn't get to kick is the one that for some of us was just a devastating loss. You know the game I'm referring to, the season ender against the Cowboys in 1979, 35-34. And the timeout, Joe's screaming for a timeout, Don Warren's calling for a timeout. There was no precise timing back then. They got the timeout with 2 seconds left, but the Cowboys clock operator ran the final 2 seconds off the clock. But I think that would have been a 58 or 59-yarder at Texas Stadium. How ready for that one were you?
I was already on the field. Ready. We were ready to run out on the field and attempt it, because that was probably my best year. It was 79 through 84, 85 were my best years. That's when I really had the confidence. I had the physical ability. Joe and I were really working well together with Bostic at center. And after 80, Bostic was there at that. I think that year it was Ted Fritsch. And so we had a really good operation of kicking field goals. And that was my first Pro Bowl year. And I was mentally, I did not believe I could miss. That's why in 82, every kick I went out, I felt like I was going to make before I ever even attempted. And so I was, I was ready to make that. And I was making them in practice every day. So it wasn't like it would be a surprise if I made it.
Do you remember what your distance was in pregame warmups? Because one of the things I remember about that game, because I looked it up recently, is it was a very cold day in Dallas. So do you remember what your range was in warmups before that game?
Yeah, I had gone back to 50. Usually I went back to 56 to 58 yards warming up. And in Dallas, in that stadium, it's funny that the coaches there, the special team coaches for Dallas, were always upset because I kicked the ball on kickoff so high, and my field goals, I got them up so fast that they couldn't block them.
Right.
And in the stadium there, I don't think they ever realized how that big opening in the top, what that did for kicking, because when I kicked off, I kicked the ball so high, it would get caught in the warm air going out the stadium out that hole in the roof. And it would hang the balls up forever on kickoffs. And that's why they hated that. They would send guys after me. I have a joke that Thomas Henderson and I have always joked about this. The coach that was with Chicago, that was a special teams coach for Dallas before he had Thomas Henderson going after me on every kickoff to try to knock me down to keep me from kicking the ball so high. But it was just a thing in Dallas that I could kick the ball forever. And it was just I enjoyed going to Dallas and kicking, because it was so much fun to watch their eyes when you kick off and they're looking at the ball and they're looking at you, then they're looking up at the ball and then back down and seeing these guys getting closer and closer to them and the ball still hanging up in the air. They hated that. But as far as kicking field goals, that was easy.
So you would have made that 58-59 yarder, and we would have won the division.
I would have. I would have kicked that. That there's no doubt about it. Mentally, I was ready. Physically, I was ready. There was the only thing that would have kept it from happening if there was something happened on the snap or the hold. But we would have. I think 95% would have made it.
That's unbelievable. I'm thinking of the other kicker from that era, and it probably wasn't that year, but the other guy in the league that had a massive leg was actually a local guy, Nick Lowry, who went to St. Albans here in the district. And I'm thinking, unless you tell me otherwise, that the two of you had the biggest legs in the league.
Probably so. I would think so. Nick was a very consistent kicker. He was very good. He came in after Stenerud left Kansas City, and was a very, very consistently every year in and year out, was a really good kicker, and did a great job. And he had a very strong leg. You're right, and I think probably had the strongest legs. But I looked at kicking as how good were you every year. Every year you needed to be up there. Making the field goals, and my whole goal was to not miss a game, anything that would affect our team that would cost us a game at the end. So that's why most of my coaches liked to have me on the team, because I knew for some reason I could make the real important last second kicks. And I only missed one in my whole career, and that was against Green Bay.
Bay.
And in 83, and that's the only one I ever missed in my career that cost us a game.
I was gonna ask you, what's the one you'd love to have back? And I was thinking about that one because that's one of the famous Monday night games. For many years, it was the highest scoring Monday night game of all time, 48-47. And you had a kick at the gun to win it, and it would have been 50-48. The final would have been.
Yeah, I had made I think 5 or 6 field goals that night already.
Yeah,
and that was just a 39-yarder, and I should have made that in my sleep. But I hit the right upright with it. And that right upright was a nemesis for me in my career, because when I missed a kick, it was usually to the right.
Am I right that Stinnerud was the kicker for the Packers that night?
Yes, he was.
At the very end of his career?
Yes, he was.
He didn't win an MVP. You did, and the kick that we came in with was certainly up there on the list of your most memorable kicks. The one that beat the Giants, the one that set the NFL record at that time back in 1982. Another game winner for you in that 82 strike shortened season. You had several of them, and it was, you know, those big kicks that led to your MVP that year and the only kicker to ever win an MVP. Is that at the top of the list of most memorable kicks for Mark Moseley?
Oh yeah, definitely. It would be hard not to be. It was a driving snowstorm. You could barely stand up. We needed that win to solidify a playoff spot. It was going to set the record, and it was going to win the game. So there was a lot of pressure on that one kick. But I was for some reason mentally I was ready to go. I was right up underneath Coach Gibbs's arms, waiting on him, waiting to go in.
Yeah, you really were. For those that are younger, but a lot of the audience is, certainly remembers your day, you in the day. You were such a big time clutch kicker, as you described, because that season to me started with Moseley beating the Eagles. I know it was a high scoring game, but before the strike, you had a long field goal to force the overtime, and then you won that game in overtime, and that really jump started the 82 season, even though you guys went away for about 6 or 7 weeks.
Right. Well, the next week we played Tampa.
Right, in the rain.
In the dry, huge rainstorm. I mean, we had to get out of town fast just to beat the storm. But, I think I had 2 or 3 field goals in that game that were the game, they were the points that put us over to win. And then we went on strike for 6 weeks. And then when we came back, as soon as we came back, we started right where we left off. And it seemed like every game they were really depending on my kicks. And so it was an important year for me. It was a exciting year. It was just one of those things that the good Lord handles. He just put me in the right place at the right time. And
I always felt like you should have had the record there for all those years, that if you had had the attempt instead of from 70 in 74, if you had just gotten one attempt from 64, you would have held the record for a long time.
Yeah, probably so. But I prided myself in being strong, but physically being strong, but more so being mentally strong. I think that's the biggest thing that kickers have trouble with today, is the mental part of it. There's so much pressure now being put on the kickers that the mental part of it's what gets them. They keep worrying about, if I miss one, I'm going to be out of here. Instead of just going to the next one and keep your mindset to the next one. And you can't ever think about the misses. You got to go for the next kick.
And remind me of the inspection of Mark Moseley's shoe before games, where that started, how that came about.
Well, it actually started in Dallas that same year that I was telling you. They were what was the coach? He's in the Hall of Fame. That was the coach for Chicago, but at the time he was a special teams coach in Dallas. He was a tight end for Chicago. He's in the Hall of Fame. Anyway,
well, not Ditka.
He was the special. Yeah, Ditka. That's
okay.
Mike Ditka.
Okay, Ditka, so was Ditka was Landry's special teams coach. Got it. Yeah,
he was a special teams coach there in Dallas, and he kept they kept accusing me of having something in my shoe. they kept saying he's got to have something in his shoe to kick the ball that hard and that high. There's got to be something. So they called the officials, and the officials warned us before the game that they were going to be checking my shoe. And after every kickoff and every field goal, every extra point, they would come up, follow me over to the sideline, and make me take my shoe off, so they could inspect it and make sure that I didn't have something illegal in my shoe, which was kind of ridiculous.
Every week they did that, every time you played them.
Every time we played Dallas, and then the next week against St. Louis, they did the same thing. Joe Thomas was the general manager there, and he made the officials do the same thing the next week in St. Louis. As a matter of fact, when we were warming up before the game, he came out on the field when we were kicking, working on our field goals, and stood almost between me and the goalpost, right beside me. I mean, he was not 2 feet from me, and watching me kick every kick. And he was watching my foot hit the ball to see if he thought I had something illegal in my shoe. And it was,
wow.
Finally, Theismann. No, it wasn't Joe. Joe called over Coach Lanham, who was our special teams coach, and said, "Hey, can you get them to get Joe out here?" And so he went over and talked to Joe, and he moved out of the way, but because if I shanked one, I would have hit him right in the head. But it was just one of those things that was the only thing they had to do to me, was to try to psych me out if they could, and that was the tactic that they used. But it didn't work. I still kicked off, and St. Louis didn't like the high kickoffs because they had Terry Metcalf back there in the back, and they wanted him to get that ball quick and get down the field. And we would be inside the 10-yard line by the time he caught the football. And that really slowed down their kickoff returns. So it was fun. It was a skills game as well as a mental game that everybody played back in those days. You know, everybody looked for that little edge.
You know, this year, and we're talking to, of course, the great Mark Moseley here on the show, I think this year we've seen more accuracy from distance than in any year in NFL history. Kickers are routinely drilling them from 50 plus, 55 plus, 58, 59. We see, you know, low 60s all the time. Brandon Aubrey, the kicker in Dallas, who now, you know, has a 65-yarder, 1 yard short of Justin Tucker's 66-yard record. He tried a 70-yarder just last Sunday against Carolina. He did not get it there. It was short. But what do you make of today's kickers? And, you know, the conditions are certainly different than the ones you kicked in.
Yeah, well, that's a big part of it. Plus, the football's different. Kickers have their own footballs now.
Yeah.
And they doctor them up a lot. I mean, they overinflate them during the week, and then they let the air out on Saturday so the ball's nice and mushy, and they can control it a lot better. But soccer has really come a long way. It's really improved the game a lot as far as kicking because of the control that they have. The way they're kicking and swinging their leg, they have a lot of leverage, so they get a lot of leg speed through the ball. But they have a much bigger striking surface. They have the whole top of their foot that they use to control the direction of the ball, which makes a huge difference. You know, back when I was kicking with that little 4-inch square toe, the ball had to be perfectly placed. If it was off to one side or the other,
yeah,
once your plant foot was down, you couldn't change your momentum because you were swinging straight through the ball. So it made a big difference. The consistency and the accuracy is much, much better now. They can control that with their swing of their leg, with the placement of their foot down there on the ball. So it's really helped, and it's a huge improvement over the last few years because they've mastered it so well.
Do you have a favorite that you watch right now?
Favorite kickers?
Yeah.
I've always liked Justin Tucker. I think Justin's one of the best, not just because he's got a good leg and he's good, but he's a, if I'm not mistaken, he's a Texas boy, and he's also,
yep,
he's very strong mentally. He's a really, really tough kid mentally, and that's, to me, that's what makes a good kicker. If you got a kicker that can maybe miss a kick or two early on, but comes back and makes a big kick at the end, that's the guy you want, because that tells you he's got the mental capacity to be able to push out all the bad and look forward to the good.
He's had his worst year by far, and he's missed some kicks that he normally would make, and people have kind of referred to the struggles that he's had this year because he's he's probably, you know, the next, well, I would imagine that, well, let me just real quickly ask you, can you develop the yips in as a kicker?
Well, every kicker goes through it. You're not going to get through your career and not have a yup year or two throughout that career. That's why coaches have to be patient. They have to have confidence in their kickers so that when they do start struggling a little bit, they can work with them and help get them through it. It's just a confidence factor because every kicker doesn't want to miss a kick. He doesn't want to let his teammates down. And when they do, it's really tough. I remember when I missed that kick against Green Bay, that was the hardest thing that I'd ever had to deal with because I hadn't had that experience before. And the feeling I had of letting my teammates down was terrible. I mean, it was so depressing that it really took me a couple of days to get over it. But I was able to and came back in the next week and kicked well. But a lot of kickers go through that. And right now, for him, he's just, you know, there's just little things. There could be something. He could have twitched a little muscle or something, not even in his kicking leg, maybe in his left hip or his leg or something, or even a rib or something that can change your motion a little bit. And but if not, it's just he'll make a couple and he'll hit two or three in a game and it'll be over with. I remember in, I think it was 1980, I started off really slow that year and I was really struggling for it for some reason. And all of a sudden, I made 3 field goals in one game and didn't miss another one the rest of the year. So, I mean, it's just a matter of what's between the ears and how you handle it. And Justin's been there. He's strong enough physically and mentally to be able to handle it, and he'll be out of it. And I know the coaches are not going to, and his teammates are not going to give up on him. He's just been too good too long, and he'll come back from it. Now,
you know, as you're talking, you're reminding me of things like you, you know, in the championship game against the 49ers, you know, in talking about mental toughness and being able to bounce back from adversity, you missed your first few kicks in that game and then came onto the field for the game winner with just a little bit of time left in a tie game and drilled it. I think you did the same thing with the Browns in the playoff game, that long playoff game against the Jets.
I did. I missed a field goal that should have been easy against the Jets and came back in the second overtime and won it for us and put us in that AFC championship against Denver. But the 49ers game was one of my hardest games I ever played because I think I missed 3 or 4 field goals in that game.
Yeah.
And the problem was in that game it was such a sloppy game. I mean, you couldn't even stand up on the field. Matter of fact, Ray Wershing on the first kickoff, if you recall, he missed on the kickoff. His foot went out from under him. He just barely hit the ball. It trickled down about 10 or 12 yards, and we recovered it. But we started the game from like the 50-yard line. And
he missed a bunch of field goals in that game too.
Yeah, we all did. It was just you could not get your plant foot to stay under you. And matter of fact, for what I did on the last kick, it wasn't a long kick. I think it was 30 yards or 20 something yards. I forget now what it was, but I remember telling Joe, I said, Joe, I'm just going to put my plant foot down here. You set the ball and I'm going to kick it. I'm going to swing. I'm not even going to take any steps because I knew if I did, my plant foot was going to slide and I wouldn't be able to hit the ball true. So, but we made it and ended up, that's what put us in the Super Bowl.
Mark was the kicker for Cleveland in his final season in the NFL year. In the NFL, they beat the Jets in double overtime. It's actually part of the New York Sack Exchange 30 for 30, which aired last week. And then in the famous drive, John Elway game, Mosley was the kicker for the Browns that day. And so you were on the field for that first Elway famous, you know, game against the Browns, the drive, 99 yards.
Matter of fact, I had kicked a field goal and then kicked off, and we got him on the 3-yard line. And there was, I think it was less than 2 minutes left in the game, and he went 97 yards. We had him fourth and 19, I think, and one on that last drive, and he scrambled and got first down and kept the drive going, and they ended up scoring and going to the Super Bowl that game.
Yeah, and you did not. You did not get a shot in overtime because you were 2 for 2 in that game in regulation.
Yeah, it was a, it was an exciting game, but it was really that playing in Cleveland in that old stadium at that time was really rough. I mean, there were places in that field. That's what happened against the Jets. We ended up the field goal that I missed was a close field goal, but it was right in the middle of a mud hole, and we couldn't move it. I moved over. It was so big you couldn't move out of it without being out of the range of the snapper.
So you were only there for 1 year, but you were there for two famous playoff games in Cleveland Browns history. Marty Schottenheimer was the coach. Are you remembered in Cleveland?
Oh yeah, in the new stadium downstairs. That kick I made against the Jets is—it's the whole wall. It must be a 40-by-20-foot wall downstairs, and where the food is. And they've got that picture of me kicking that field goal. So I mean, it's—I get stuff from Cleveland all the time. I finished my career there, and Marty Schottenheimer was the coach. As a matter of fact, I tell you what, I can't. When you get old, you can't
it's
remember
fine.
Names. But the coach from that with our special teams coach that year was the coach that ended up in Pittsburgh all those years to take them to Super Bowls. It's on
Cower.
TV now.
No, Cower.
Cower. Yes, Cower. Cower was the special teams coach. And as soon as I got there, he started bringing me into his office every afternoon for an hour or so just to pick my brain on special teams because he'd never really coached special teams. But I helped him through that year, helping him design plays on kickoffs and kickoff returns, all kinds of stuff, and punts. It was fun. I enjoyed it. That was a good year. It was fun being there, and it gave me a good feeling to be able to retire on because I for some reason had struggled that last year here in Washington before I was cut. Going to Cleveland and winning out of the last four regular season games that I played for them, I think I won three of them.
Wow.
And then I beat the Jets in the playoffs. So they remember me there. But it was the first game I played was against the Houston Oilers, and it was on Thanksgiving Day. I got there on Monday. I got there on Tuesday. We played Houston in Cleveland on Thursday, and I kicked a 47-yard field goal to win the game against Houston.
Really?
And I kicked it against the right towards the dog pound. And in Cleveland, you had to be a fan of the dog pound. If you weren't, they were going to boo you out of the stadium.
Right.
And after that first game, I was in like Flint in Cleveland.
Well, you know what I remember? I remember after they cut you, the disaster of the Zendejas's. You know, that it did not go well. And I guess it finally got to the point where it was Jess Atkinson who finally came in and kind of settled things down a little bit, but the Zendejas, that was a complete circus with your replacement in that time.
Yeah, it was a mess. But I was so busy trying to figure out what my next career was going to be at that time. The first couple of weeks I was out, and I wasn't getting any phone calls. And then finally, I ended up in Cleveland there, and that was a good experience for me. But they had Zendejas and Jess Atkins came in. Matter of fact, he had been doing color and doing the local sports here on one of the channels.
Yeah, Channel 9 maybe, yeah. Or maybe working for George Michael at Channel 4 at the time. I forget.
He was working with George Michaels at that time. And they brought him in here and he'd kicked at Maryland.
Yeah.
And did a good job for him that year. And then I think he did. He kicked for him the next year, or was that when they kicked? Or they drafted Low Miller. I can't remember
Low Miller. So the next year, oh God, hold on for a second. Now you're pushing me in my memory. Jess, I think, kicked in that 86 playoff run. But they had what's his face from the Giants.
That's right, Ali Haji Sheik.
Ali Haji Sheik, of course.
Yeah,
because he kicked in in the Super Bowl win over the Broncos. He was the kicker.
That was right. I forgot all about him being here. Yeah, but it was when I went to Cleveland, that was exciting for me to have an opportunity to finish out like I did. But there was kickers. There have been a lot of kickers through here. over the years.
Yeah, there have been. But you, you, sir, all due respect to the others, are the most memorable for anybody that lived through the glory years. And Chip was a really good kicker, too. Obviously memorable, but not like you. Mark Mosley's the only kicker to ever win an NFL MVP. This was so much fun. I really appreciate it. I wish you the best. Happy holidays, etc. And I would love to do it again soon.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And I've been busy the last 24 years.
I know you've been very successful. As you said, you were trying to figure out what you're going to do with your life after Cleveland. You did pretty well. So we'll talk about that next time.
All right. And I'm getting ready to retire here after this month. So I'm going to start taking it easy.
Well, I think we all like Five Guys. So so congrats on all of your success. And again, happy holidays, Mark.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Merry Christmas to everybody.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you too. Mark Mosley, everybody. That was fun. It's been a long time since, I think maybe 10 years ago, Tommy and I had Mark on the show. I don't know why I haven't had him on before or since then, but good to catch up with him. All right, we'll do some Denton news, then keys to beating Philadelphia coming up before the end of the hour. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. All right, Denton, what do you got?
All right, we got a lot of good news from Commanders practice today, Kevin. Jeremy Chinn, John Allen, and Zach Ertz, all in regular jerseys. John Bates, Sam Cosmi back after both having been sick this week. Today looks like it's a great day of practice for the Commanders. You had asked Ben about the potential of John Allen playing, and there wasn't a super concrete answer. Still, it seems like this weekend is unlikely, but the fact that he's in a regular practice jersey, and of course, you know, Ben tweeted this out like 4 minutes, 5 minutes after he got off air with us, but the fact that he's in a regular practice jersey does mean that it could be a possibility.
I mean, just get everybody healthy. Keep everybody healthy. The Ertz thing is the thing for Sunday that I'm most interested in, because I really think they could use Zach Ertz Sunday. They've got to stay, and I'll get to my keys, but you cannot be in second and third and long against Philadelphia. It'll be a long you-know-what day if they are. And you need every offensive weapon you can get. That'd be interesting if John came back this early. That would be a surprise to almost, I think, a lot of people out there. I know that they knew there was a chance after the surgery that he could come back this year, but I don't think they thought it would be with three games left in the regular season. That'd be great for him.
Yeah, that'd be huge. That'd be huge for the defense, too. I mean, I know they weren't the greatest in the world at the beginning of the season when he was healthy and playing, but adding a guy like him back to that defensive front, even if it is only for 20-25 snaps, if that, still positive.
Yeah, totally. All right, what's next?
All right, how about yesterday in the Washington Post, Mark Maskey wrote a column suggesting that the NFL is open to the idea of removing the onside kick in favor of a 4th-and-20. I don't know what the percentages are off the top of my head, but I can tell you the recovery percentages of an onside kick suck, and it'd be way more entertaining to see a 4th-and-20. You know, I thought when they first brought this up, Kevin, it was 4th-and-15, and it feels like because now quarterbacks are so good and offenses are so good at picking up 15 yards that they've expanded it to 4th-and-20 to make it a little more difficult. But I think most fans would much rather see something like this than an onside kick.
3 of 45 this year, according to Maskey and Maskey's column. Last year, by the way, 1 for 28. Through the first 15 games of the season, and the year before that, it was 2 of 42. This is now basically such a long shot play, and it basically means the game is over if you're down by two scores with less than, you know, 2 minutes to go, especially if you don't have timeouts. Obviously, if you don't have timeouts, and it used to be higher, so I'm for a 4th-and-15 or a 4th-and-20. Whatever lines up 4th-and-15, 4th-and-20 to whatever the odds were before they changed the rules and made onside kicks impossible, whether that's 4th-and-15, 4th-and-18, 4th-and-20, do that. You know, let's make this at least a 1 out of 10. you know, kind of a play. You know, maybe a little bit better than 1 out of 10, 12, 13, 14% somewhere in that neighborhood. So whatever those percentages would be for 4th and 15, 4th and 20, let's go with that. Now, they've talked about where would the ball be placed. And some people have said the 35-yard line. I don't think you can have a 4th and 15 or 4th and 20 and start it at the 35. I think you got to... I mean, if you pick it up, you're almost in range, you know, in today's game. So I think you would have to back up to at least the 25-yard line. But I think that would be a dramatic play and would be fun. Now, you know, if you've got a Pat Mahomes or a Josh Allen or a Jaden Daniels, would you take advantage of that and use it when you don't have to use it at the end of games? You know, and just say, you know what? We're playing a team that we can't stop on defense. We're going to take a couple of swings at 4th and 15 because they can't stop us either. Like, what if you got into one of those games where you couldn't stop either team and teams just said, yeah, we're not going to kick it off to you. We think we can make 4th and 15. You know, and it's the second quarter. I wouldn't want to see that. So maybe you would institute something like this is – only in the fourth quarter, you've got to be behind, you know, et cetera, to do it. But I'm in favor of an alternative to the onside kick.
That what you just mentioned was going to be my question. Like, how do you institute something to stop it from being a make it take it? Where you constantly go for 4th and 20s.
Because like Dan Campbell, you can't have that. 100%.
Dan Campbell attempted an onside kick.
Well, so what I just said, wouldn't that be the solution?
Right. I think it would. But do you think it's just the fourth quarter? Or do you think it would be a timeline or time stamp in the fourth quarter? Like Dan Campbell went for an onside kick with 12 minutes left.
Well, I think it would be something like it's fourth quarter and you can only do it if you are behind by... You know, you can only do it if you're behind. You can't do it if you get the lead.
Yeah. I think I would agree with that. Or maybe like within eight minutes of the fourth quarter, you can pull this off. Because like I don't know that it would be fun. Like, let's just say hypothetical. Obviously, we'll use like the Sean Payton surprise onside kick happened in the Super Bowl. But like, could you imagine coming out of the locker room and be like, all right, we're just going to attempt a 4th
yeah,
and 20 here.
We don't want to see that.
No.
That would be too dramatic of a change. I mean, look, we've dealt with the new kickoff rule this year. I don't know about you, and I forget.
I like it.
I'm fine with it. I'm surprised at how fine with it I am. Now, it has not... You said you like it.
Yeah, I liked it before it was even instituted. I liked the XFL, so I was a fan of it from the jump. But I think it is – I enjoy the way that it has been utilized.
Here's the thing, though. It didn't accomplish what it set out to accomplish. You haven't seen a dramatic increase in kickoff returns. You've seen an increase, but not a dramatic increase. You haven't seen a lot of big plays on kickoff returns like they were expecting. So will they go back to the old rule? I don't think so. I think the risk was that you didn't get the results and fans really pushed back on it saying it doesn't, you know, we don't like it. I don't hear people saying that. I'm fine with it. It's fine. You know, what was interesting, and I forget the game. It may have been the Monday night game. Who played? There were two Monday night games. Raiders.
Raiders, Falcons, and then Falcons Minnesota and Chicago.
And one of the kickoffs hit in the landing zone and went into the end zone. And the announcers didn't say anything. And that is a 20-yard line start, not a 30-yard line start. So the other team started first and 10 from their own 20. I forget who the team was now. And it wasn't. That's been an unusual, you know, landing in the end zone, in the landing zone and then going into the end zone for a touchback. That would be the ultimate for the kickoff team, but it's hard to do with two returners. You know, you've had to put two returners back to cover against the landing zone hit into the end zone for a touchback because then the ball comes out to the 20. I'm fine with the new kickoff rule. I would be fine with a fourth quarter only when behind, 4th and 15, 4th and 18, 4th and 20, whatever would equate to the percentages that you want converted, which I would say you got to get it to like, you know, what the old onside kick conversion percentages were at the very least. And I would go with that. I think that would be really actually incredibly dramatic And for those that don't know how that would work, let's just say you'd start at, you'd have a 4th and 15 in lieu of an onside kick from your own, call it 25-yard line, and it would be like a regular play, a timed play, like it's a 4th and 15. If you pick up 12 yards, the other team takes over. It's a turnover on downs. If you pick up the first down, you keep the ball. You know, if there's a sack, the other team gets the ball where they sacked you because that's a loss of down. You know, you've turned it over on downs. I'd like that personally. What else do you have?
All right, final thing here. I wasn't watching this game. I can't imagine you were watching this game, but an all-time terrible game for the Golden State Warriors last night in the NBA. They lost by 51, but listen to
what?
The stat line. Yeah, 144-93 to the Grizzlies. It was the first game in the career of both Steph Curry and I think Draymond Green, but certainly linked together, that neither of those two made a field goal. And I got that notification on my phone late last night, and I checked. I was like, all right, did Steph like actually play, though? Did he play more than 5 minutes, 10 minutes? Steph played 24 minutes, went 0 of 7 from the field. He did have two free throws, so he did score. He had 3 rebounds, 1 assist, a steal, a block, and 2 turnovers. He was minus 41. Draymond had no points, no field goals, no free throws, no rebounds, no assists, 1 steal, a block, 4 turnovers, and 4 personal fouls in 19 minutes. They got killed.
The Draymond number actually doesn't actually surprise me that he's had a terrible game like that before, even though I think he is a great all-time player. Curry didn't score in the game, you're saying?
Oh, he had 2 free throws, so he scored 2 points.
Oh, my God. What was he from the floor again?
0 of 7. If you look at the history of Steph Curry, I don't think you'll find very
Memphis,
many games,
by the way,
if at all,
good.
With no field goals. Memphis is a buzzsaw right now. They're 19-9 in the West. The Warriors, who started off crazy, are 14-12.
Wow. All right. That's crazy that Steph could have that bad of a game, playing 24 minutes. All right, when we come back, I will give you my keys to a win over Philadelphia. College football playoff talk, smell test picks, and our Skins Eagles predictions all coming up in the next hour. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. Also, want all of you to know that Maryland drivers in particular, did you know a vehicle is stolen every 16 minutes in the state of Maryland? The key to preventing theft is in your hands. Lock your car, take your key, use an anti-theft device. Learn more about vehicle theft prevention at mdautotheft.org.